Hey friends, I'm your San Francisco referral partner, Sean Kunkler. On this fun and interesting episode, I sit down with Anita Wong and Tiffany Lee, who are fellow realtors and the host of the Sarah Ladies podcast dedicated to helping API investors. We also talk about the need for community relationships and the results from helping others reach their goals. As well, we talk about overcoming challenges we pose on ourselves when it comes to putting our work out there. So stay tuned for what's to come. Thank you two for joining me today. I sincerely appreciate it.
Happy to be here. Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having us.
All right. So I've never had two people on the episode before, so we'll see what happens. So I'm going to kind of jump back and forth. I'll try to address you so we don't step on each other too much. But in a sentence or two, Tiffany, who are you and what do you do?
I'm Tiffany. I'm a real estate agent, a Compass real estate agent out in New York. I recently joined the mailing group, so I'm actually doing more commercial deals in addition to residential deals, which I've been doing for the past 10 years. And outside of real estate, I am a former full-time professional poker player and a stand-up comedian that, you know, jumps from mic to mic in New York City.
That is amazing. I love that. Both of those totally left field, I didn't expect answers. Anita, same question. Who are you and what do you do?
Hi, my name is Anita Wong. I am from the Bay Area. I have loved buildings my whole life. I have a background from in architecture from USC. I went to business school and then jumped into real estate. I've been a real estate investor for 15 years. I now have a mission of helping API women get to a million doors. It's a new goal. And so we run Sarah Ladies, Tiffany and myself, and it is an amazing group for API women.
So for people listening and maybe not familiar, what's Sarah Ladies and API?
It's Asian American Pacific Islander.
And what is Sarah Ladies? Sarah stands for Subtle Asian Real Estate. And ladies, obviously, we run the women's division of Sarah. Sarah is a 22,000 member group across the nation. And we help bring diversity to real estate. We have real estate investors from pretty much all ends of the investment world, and from industrial, commercial, to residential, short-term rental, long-term rental. So it really runs the gamut. But it's a really great group where even from people from zero to one, or even people that have extremely large portfolios, really gather together. And we have lots of events throughout, you know, basically all over the nation. Our head, Annie Liu and Nelson Lin, are based out in California and New York. In Austin. And then the ladies division, myself and Tiffany, are based out in Bay Area and in New York.
The ladies division was kind of your brainchild between the two of you?
So Sarah is a Facebook group, and I actually somehow found my way to a mom group, an Asian mom group. And in the comments, I'm not a mother, by the way. I have no child. I have a dog child, but somehow I ended up on this Facebook group because you know how like in resi real estate, they're like, find like a group of women who are, you know, looking to expand. So who else than moms, right? So I was kind of trying to find a sphere of influence. And I realized in doing this, like, oh, I actually have to be a mom too, to really connect with these women. And it was just like funny to me. So anyway, I ended up in this group, and in one of the comments, they were talking about real estate syndications. And I realized that there was a need for more real estate investment and just financial literacy in general for the segment is, you know, newly stay at home moms that want to find a way to generate income for their family now that they're no longer one half of the primary breadwinners. So they're kind of in this mindset of, you know, wanting to maximize what their partner is bringing home. So I realized that there was a need for this of, you know, more financial literacy. And these are all college educated women as well. So what I learned from this group, but not also being in this group, that there's a sense of identity, of self-identity that leaves when you become a mother. You almost like become like the first few months, you're like a vessel of just like, you're a milk machine. That's it. You have to wake up and do that. And I say this as if I've done it, but I haven't. Anyway, I wanted to put together, you know, a presentation, like an investment presentation for this group of women because they were super engaged and they wanted to learn more about it. So that's when I jumped into our workplace Facebook group, threw a feeler out there and said, hey, does anyone know about real estate syndications? Because I have a captive audience that wants to learn about it. And I put in a funny GIF just to like get attention on the mastermind group. And funny enough, it's like 500 agents saw it. Nobody touched it except for one lone person who is Anita, who is now my business partner, co-host, and all around rock star. And almost like a rock to my life. You know, we call each other our work wives, and that's it's a very apt description, but you know, of our relationship. But yeah, that's kind of how the group started. And we found out in our initial meeting of each other that we both belong to this Settle Asian Real Estate Facebook group. So that's a mouthful. And I've already forgotten what the original question was, but that's how we got here. That's what Subtle Asian Real Estate Lady says. That was the origin story of us.
That is very cool. And so I'm sure people are listening and they're just insanely curious. What was that GIF?
So it was a unhinged GIF of Willem Dafoe, where he's in the back of a car. He's all bug-eyed. And the bottom says, hey, you guys want some real estate? So it was just crazy town. And everyone just saw, but nobody, I guess, wanted to deal with the crazy girl from New York except for Anita, who is the most straight-edge, serious person you could find. And that was our first impression of each other, too. I thought Anita was way more mature and possibly older than me because of how we carried ourselves. And Anita's first impression of me was like, wow, this girl talks a lot. Like, I didn't shut up the first few. Anita's like, her eyes are like, yes. But then in talking to each other, we found out like we're the same age. We were born the same year and were raised with really similar like cultural upbringings and mindsets, but just on different coasts. So it felt very serendipitous meeting each other in this specific way.
I want to add to that, that like Tiffany, for sure, I was kind of going through this like an identity crisis at that time too, because this is at the time where like San Francisco and New York were having just news after news article about AAPI hate crimes in our very backyard, right? And so I was kind of dealing with like, you know, post-pandemic, like what is life and work for? And, you know, what is the purpose of, you know, just being in real estate? And so I like, you know, I found like you know, Tiffany, who shared a lot of the sentiments and, you know, like the curiosities that I was dealing with about my own identity in real estate. And then it was sort of like a reaction to be like, I needed to lean into my community more as sort of like to understand why AAPI hate crimes were happening in today. And like, this is like an aha moment for me when I was like, I was buying weapons for my 65-year-old parents. And I was just like, what? Like I was buying like pepper spray, teaching them how to, you know, do like self-defense. I was like, why am I doing this? It makes no sense. And I just knew that the world was really screwed up and I needed to lean in more. And so was really happy to find Tiffany and find some purpose in, you know, our work.
Yeah. And the AAPI crimes were a byproduct of COVID, just in case everyone forgot about that. Yeah.
It definitely, COVID brought out the good in people, but it also really brought out the crazy. And it unfortunately became extremely polarizing, which perpetuated fear, which perpetuates hate. And it's sad, but within our real estate community, the cool byproduct is we kind of all came together because we were all different places doing different things, but having a similar challenge. I do business out of San Francisco primarily. And I mean, there was a whole period where you literally couldn't even show properties. Selling homes was not considered
non-essential. We were non-essential workers.
Yeah, we were non-essential. So we literally could not show properties. So our businesses stopped. And so panic set in. And so I know for me, I was leaning on colleagues who were all panicking or fellow entrepreneurs. One of my good friends is a dentist who owns his own practice, and we would just talk about, what are you doing? How are you marketing yourself? How are you keeping sane? And it was definitely a rough bout. That is for sure.
I remember that where we had to bring sanitizer to every single showing and do it one by one. I was like, thank God it's over. But I remember even during like the whole API hate crime thing that I even gave up a lot of my open houses so that my male colleagues, either we had to pair up because I was just hearing all these terrifying stories of, you know, people being attacked in open houses, right? And I gave up a lot of opportunity because I was too scared to do open houses by myself because I thought, you know, people were being followed in San Francisco. And this is such a reality for women too, right? It's like I had several coaching programs where like, okay, you make sure that you, you know, when you get into a house, you deadbolt both doors before heading into a showing, and then you close, and then you walk back out at the time when an open house starts, you know, like, so that no one can, you know, can attack you. Like, I was like, oh my God, I didn't even think about these things. It's just the reality of being a realtor, really.
I'm obviously male, but and a black belt. And so I walk into properties, I do the same thing. And I was just talking to my business partner, Priyanka, and I'm like, yeah, when you go into a property, lock the door the moment you get there, and then make sure you identify your clients when they, if they arrive after you, before you open that door, and then keep a secure area. Have you heard of the colored envelopes?
Like you're sending colored envelope for like marketing? What do you mean?
So basically you have a point person. So let's say, Anita, you're going to an open house and you're like, you call up Tiffany and you're like, hey, I'm going to be there from 1 to 3. I'll text you when I get there. I'll text you when I leave. And then, so this way it's on somebody's radar of where you're actually physically going to be. But if during the open house, somebody creepy or comes in, they give you the creeps, right? They're just giving you the creeps. They haven't done anything. You can call up Anita and just say, hey, I think I left the orange envelope on my desk. Can you take a look? And so Orange is telling her that there's something going on. Don't panic, but like communicate. If I don't communicate with you in X amount of minutes, then escalate this. And then if you call her and say, hey, I think I left the red envelope on my desk, it basically tells her, call 911. Like stuff's going down. And so at least you have a second person who's kind of looking out for you.
I love that so much. I'm going to start implementing all of this.
Good. I mean, I think our safety is as agents is it's incredibly important. And I mean, the truth of the matter is we're walking into, we think, empty homes. And so I think we should be aware. I also am a firm believer that people should have some sort of self-defense, but also just walk through scenarios in your head. Even when you're hosting open houses, like I will strategically stand on the other side of the dining room table. So then this way, if somebody approaches, they have to go around and I can maneuver around that instead of them being able to come straight towards me. And so without doing it in a way that looks like you're paranoid or weird or anything, people don't even notice.
You need self-defense for realtors class, because I would attend.
We should. Actually, look me up. I'm in your neighborhood. Another good friend of mine, Derek, is a real estate agent and martial artist. And I know he's done actual classes in the past. In the past, I've actually taught self-defense classes too. So yeah, I think there's probably something there. I think it's important. People should know how to preserve themselves. That was a tangent. I apologize.
No, I love it. I live for those.
I always joke. I'm like, the inside of my brain is like a ping pong machine. It's just like, it goes from idea and thought randomly and abruptly. I can't control it. So how long have you two been doing your podcast? How long has that been running?
We've been doing it for, I think, about 15 months now, but we are on our second season, our 32nd episode.
Whoa, and congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it took a lot of work. I'm not gonna lie. These are hard.
Yeah. Kudos to you.
Painfully hard. Mm-hmm. There's so many moving parts.
Yeah. We couldn't even listen to our first few episodes these days because we were like, oh, man, we were so green. it's so hard to listen to. And those were the episodes where we're like, okay, we probably need a script. We probably need an outline.
We had a lot of perfectionism issues, and we talk about that all the time to be like when we first started the podcast, right? Because we're like, oh my gosh, we need to be perfect. And then our first ones were just long, rambly. I couldn't even pick a topic out of the entire thing because they were just like, we're just going to start talking and then we'll pick a topic from it. And then we decided to start refining. And now if you listened, like in our first one, we're drastically different. We even have like, you know, we have like sponsorship, like we have ads, we have like, you know, like opening, like music. So now we're a lot more professional, a lot more refined out of a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
We love it because we get to wake up on Friday mornings and just talk to real estate professionals. And it's just like, it doesn't even feel like we're doing a podcast. We're just talking to people.
My recording day is Friday. We're sitting down on a Friday. And I look forward to it. And it's the same thing. It's like I pour a cup of coffee and I get to hang out with super cool people anywhere in the US and learn about what they're doing in their business or in their personal lives or that thing that just gets them excited, which gets me excited. And it's just amazingly fun. But the flip side, it is a lot of work. It's like working out. You feel good. It doesn't feel good doing it, but you definitely feel good after it and you enjoy the results. So it's a bittersweet.
Sean, have you ever tried rock climbing? Now I'm taking us on a tangent. Like bouldering. I love it. Bouldering is so fun, right?
I did top rope and then I did bouldering. And once I got into bouldering, I did nothing else. But I was also practicing martial arts all the time. I was riding motorcycles. And then I was starting to get a bunch of tendon issues in my fingers. So I haven't been on the wall in forever. But my son's into it, which is super cool.
Isn't it in a way kind of like a podcast, like a conversation? Because you kind of like kind of have to plan your beta first before you jump on. Otherwise, you're kind of wasting energy, right? So I love that there's kind of like a roadmap that you see. There's a general plan. But then when you're there, you're like, oh, this feels different. Let me try to make a little adjustment there. And then, I don't know, that's my favorite kind of workout lately because I get very easily bored. And it's in a way, like it keeps my brain active. And actually, to tie it back into real estate, yesterday I was at a photo shoot and I needed to lift one of those blinds that like just go up physically because we needed all the light we could get. And I'm 5'4". I'm not very tall. So I was like looking at it, I was like, I could totally send this window. So the photographer was watching me like grab the frame of the window, like flag my foot and then just like push the blinds all the way up. And I did that twice for two rooms. And then I even climbed on top of a kitchen. So I'll send you a picture of the kitchen too. I like looked at it and I like threw all the stuff off the top of the fridge, which was like probably 11 feet tall. And I was like, Tiffany, don't look down. Don't look down. That's when things get like crazy. And I was like very confident in the climb. I was like, okay, go me. So I've managed to bring bouldering to real estate, to my real estate business. It's so silly. It's the silliest thing.
No, it's fascinating because when people refer to bouldering, they refer to it as solving a problem because you're trying to connect all the, like, where do I put my hand versus my foot and my left side versus my right? And how do I position my body? It's very much like a sales script. It's, you know exactly where you want to go, but you have no idea how you're going to actually get there. Because if they say something that puts the whole thing on a tangent, you have to try to figure out how to bring it back and bring them to see your perspective for that next piece. And that's why I've said on other podcasts, people, I don't love it or hate it, I think scripts are garbage. I think you have to understand the spirit of it, the concept of it, but you have to be able to pivot with it. It's just like bouldering. It's like if you get to that one handhold and it's not big enough and you only have seconds to transit, like you have to make moves quick and you can't stall there.
Yep.
I'll volley this one to you, Anita. With the podcast, what's been the biggest challenge you've had with just marketing it and putting out the content?
I think the perfectionism was a really big barrier. We actually have a friend who just said to us, a male, he was just like, your first 100 episodes are going to be crap. And I was just like shocked because I was just like, you mean you can make 100 crappy things? Like, I just, it wasn't even fathomable to me that we could do that. And then I was just like, that is truly just like the male female mentality sometimes. And then we also discovered later that it's also to me like a Asian American thing too, right? It's because it's like we have this culture of like needing to, like, we're notorious for straight A's. Like, it's like there's a perfectionism in there that needs to, you need to hit it out of the park every time. And so he just said he knew that he was going to make 100 crappy ones before he was going to make the perfect podcast. And then here's me, it's just like we're trying to figure it out to get the first one out of the park. That mind shift mentality was really kind of pivotal because we're still not on our 100th episode now, right? But we put it out and it's out. When it's out, it's out. So we don't look back on it. We just do it. So
I love that you guys set in place to basically make 100 episodes. We literally did the same exact thing. We decided right up front, we're going to do 100 episodes and then use each one as an experiment. Try something new, do little variations, make tweaks, and then keep going back and evaluating. Like, do I like this? Do we want to keep this in? And then adjust. I agree with that mindset. To your point, it frees us up a little bit. It gives you permission to screw up. It's like you're going out to make a mistake. And you're like, that's cool if I do, because then I'll just learn what not to do. But it's a hard being a perfectionist in addition to, and knowing that it's your brand, it's your voice, it's your identity. It is incredibly hard to separate those two components from one another. But it sounds like you're doing it, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, I think it's just that the like there's a voice in your head that is so much more critical of yourself than other people will be, right? It's like people don't even call me. Like, of course, it's like no one's as vicious to you as the person in your own mind, you know. And you know, when we come out with it, it's like people still say that they listen to our first episodes and things like that. And they don't really say anything bad about it, right? They just say, you know, everyone, there's a level of grace with everyone. People know that the first season is always, you know, it's always not as good as the last one, right? Because, you know, people understand that you are growing and that they just respect that it's out, you know, because they're not doing something, you know, they're not doing something that you're doing, right? So I think that there's a lot of grace and respect out there that people don't really think about.
I recently saw, I don't remember where I saw it, but it was a quick little montage of big names like Gary Vaynerchuk and Casey Neistat and all these guys of their very first video and then their most recent video. And they were almost different people, like different quality, different audio, different every single thing about it was different minus the person's name. And so I think we do need to just give ourselves permission to have more grace to just be like, hey, it's fine. It's a dress rehearsal. You're not going to get it perfect this first time out of the gate. The improv, Tiffany, must absolutely help you with that.
I would totally agree. Doing stand-up and improv, I always have a new set of jokes that I want to try out. And sometimes you really don't know where you're going to land until you're on stage experimenting with it in front of a live audience. And then I'll record it and I'll think, oh, I didn't really like my delivery here, or I could have gotten to the premise faster and gotten the joke, gotten to the punchline faster. And sometimes I'll just meander on like I'm doing right now. But I feel like you kind of have to go through this messy process to figure out where the protein of the content is. So that's kind of my analogy back to stand up and also back to real estate. Like a new thing that I'm recently embracing is with my follow ups and my checkpoints, like they don't have to be long informative things. It could just be like, hey, what's up? And that's it. And people will like write back to you and just, you know, it's that constantly getting in front of people and getting those reps. Cause I used to have this perfectionism that like, oh, I have to have a reason to reach back out to someone. Like it has to be related back to real estate. Like I had to come up with like some dry market update or something, or like, hey, here's a new listing, but like, or here's a whole tour I already set up for you for this weekend. And they're just like, oh, I'm not free this weekend. So that has hurt me early on in the past, where I could have just been like, hey, how's your weekend looking? What's your plans look like? And then have that dictate my workflow. Like, I've always like just pounded things like and felt like I had to drop this giant bomb head on, and it's not like that at all. So yeah, that's kind of, and that very directly affects your business too, because like if you spend all this time trying to create something perfect, then what's your GCI going to look like? Maybe like one or two clients, if any. You guys, I realize it's just a contact sport follow up. So, and that has been a thorn in my side for a really long time as a real estate agent. This need to be perfect. They don't want you to be perfect. They just want you to be there, be consistent, and be human. It's the consistency and the authenticity. Yeah.
100%. I could not agree with you more. And in addition to, if you're only talking to them, it's like your dentist, right? If you only talk to your dentist about your teeth, you'll have a very narrow but deep context of that person. But if you happen to talk to them about the new car they bought or the vacation they took or their family, and then you start to get more context, you then start having a wider relationship with them that's equally as deep. The wide, deep relationships are much more like with you two, you have a wide relationship and it's deep. That's when you have those multiple points of contact, you have more context of that individual. You then understand their perspective, where they're coming from, and why they're approaching this thing like that. And from a client relationship perspective, that's when they bond with you. Like, oh, you like art and you like this artist? Oh my gosh, we like the same artist. We should go check out this show together. And now you're not talking about real estate. And next thing you know, you're getting handfuls of referrals from that person because you have a new appreciation for each other. If it's just data sheets, no one gives a crap. And sometimes just checking in, how are you? How are you doing? I know this process is daunting and I know you've seen a lot of things. How are you doing? That goes so much further than here's another data sheet you should buy because mortgage rates are going up tomorrow. Like, F that. You don't need to do that.
I don't even want to talk about it. That's been kind of my relationship with real estate lately. You know how like real estate agents, I've been doing this for up to 10 years and I've gone through cycles of burnout too, because that was what I thought I was supposed to be doing. And I think, you know, this is finally, with Sarah Ladies, I feel like I've found a way to engage and actually have a true sphere of influence, right?
Yeah.
It's an authentic connection. I agree with you 100% there. Yeah.
You cannot change the news cycle. If they're watching on the news that the mortgage rates are awful and they're the highest they've ever seen, you're not going to reframe that. It's impossible. And you're going to look like just a salesperson if you do. So change your approach. Like, think about what's the conversation they're already having in their head and either go in a different direction or make a slight adjustment, but you're not changing it.
You know, like when Tiffany and I first had our partnership, right? She was just like saying that, I don't know what my comedy background, my poker background, and my real estate background have anything to do with each other. And she was like, you know, kind of in this place of like, how can I combine a lot of my interests together, right? What was the purpose of wasting all their years doing that? And, you know, in the real estate world, everyone comes from a different background. They're teachers or scientists or whatever. And then they're like, what does this have to do with real estate now? Right. But to me, Tiffany's experience as a comedian is invaluable to me on a podcast. It's like this weird kind of scientific way she approaches the like speaking, even like when we're speaking at SarahCon or speaking at conventions, it's like she has that iterative process and science into it that I don't have. And of course, like even her poker, I call her and be like, should I call this person's bluff? I can't tell you.
I was like, you have all the leverage. You have all the leverage right now. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Pull the offer.
She's like, oh no, she doesn't have any cards in her hand. You know, like, and that's just like the strategy of it. And so I was just like, my God, like the poker background is crazy. So I actually had her teach a poker workshop and to my women's leadership summit, and how she related a lot of the poker strategy back to real estate on, you know, how to deal. Like, it just feels like dealing with people and putting, like, it's so, it teaches me a lot about bidding because, like, I'm, like, cheap. I, like, bid kind of very honestly. And then she's like, don't go in unless you're, you know, like, you're really invested into it, right? It's about the psychology of making an offer, right? And then, and so, like, she taught this whole workshop about it, and it was really great. It was super informative. But, I think I tell her, I was like, everything is compost, you know? It's like all of your life and experiences, it's not to waste, you know? It comes back in some weird form. And it's like, if you have a good partner, you have a good business, you can see all these things coming back into use, right? Because you're just kind of letting parts of you be free and supplement your business, right?
That's amazing. You reminded me, I had on the show Courtney Weasmore, who built up, it was, she had something like 200 million in annual production with her team. And now is a coach of top performing teams. But she said the biggest mistake realtors make in the seat is they hire somebody who's exactly like them. And you two did the complete opposite. Like, you found a complete puzzle piece. Like, everything that one is, the other's not. And that's where you guys have just this unique rocket fuel that accelerates you. Because if somebody's just echoing back to you the same strategy, you're not, that's not a chance. It's not challenging you to learn something. And so you guys have something really cool and unique and special. I'm a little jealous. It's amplifying.
I think I said in an earlier, in this thing where you asked me, like, you know, what's your business, your identity, you know? And then, so, you know, like Tiffany and I talk about our podcast that actually she has mental health, you know, situations. And I feel like it's a big part of our identity and our partnership to work with each other and to deal with those mental health issues, right? And a part of it is just like, what kind of person do you want to be as a business partner, right? Do you want to be a person that is, you know, fighting tooth and nail with each other, or are you going to be a person that makes each other whole, right? Do you want to make your partner whole, which, you know, in effect makes your business whole, right? So I think, like, that's such a big part of it, right? Of, like, why it, like, it's worth it to work with, you know, someone like Tiffany, who's so opposite for me, because it's, there's, like, a level of, like, I feel as, like, achievement to work with, you know, to make things work.
And it's not always rainbows and butterflies, right? Like, I know we can spin it that way, that, like, you know, our differences make us great. But, you know, behind the scenes, I'll be honest, like, we've butt heads a lot. And, you know, like any marriage, you know, there's always conflict resolution and, like, hurt feelings here and there. But I'm really proud of the way we've kind of, like, maneuvered and grown to trust each other with each conflict and problem that comes up at us. Like, yes, occasionally we'll get upset with each other, but then, like, we always kind of come around and see the bigger picture. Like, we both have a understanding that what we're doing and what we're creating is bigger than ourselves. And we've seen it happen in the past 2 years where we are sometimes in shock of, like, how far we've come. Like, after coming from Syracuse, Anita and I were just saying, I'm like, we kind of feel like minor celebrities within this group, right? Like, people are just, like, chasing Anita down or chasing me down. And Anita loves, like, I make fun of her. I'm like, Anita, you love interacting with your fans. Like, she's gotten that. She's like, usually she's almost like this person who didn't realize that she was going to become this big celebrity from this project that we're doing. And I was kind of, like, just hiding away. Like, I'm the type of star that's like, I'll be in my dressing room. I need to disassociate and just be left alone for, like, 10 minutes. But it was great. I'm very grateful for it. But it's kind of funny how she was kind of, like, you know, as starting out, she was almost the shyer one, but now she loves engaging with everyone. And I'm like, Anita, you're the official spokesperson of us. Like, you lead the mission and the statement. Cause, like, I'll just be the support and be, like, the loud mouth that just, like, hey, pay attention to the important thing that she has to say. Cause I kind of always felt like a rebel without a cause for, like, the longest time. So Anita's have, like, anchored me to something, like, bigger than myself, which, you know, if you're a kid wandering around playing poker and comedy and doing comedy as long as I have, there's really nothing rooting me down. So it was good to have, you know, like, a foundation and a home to come back to, so to speak. Yeah.
That is pretty interesting, actually. I have to say, wouldn't have imagined that, you know, post-conference when the meet and greet is happening, that you two would totally flip. I would have probably imagined it the other way. But it's cool that, Anita, it sounds like you found that other area for you to just really shine, which is cool. And it's cool that you recognize these things in each other, and you kind of know when to hand things off. We have on our team, we have an 80-20 rule. So when problems arise, most situations, people spend 80% of the time kvetching about the problem and then 20% on the solution. We try to flip it and work. Let's just 20%. We're going to spend the next few minutes of just really flush out what the problem and challenge is, get to the root of it. And let's spend 80% of the remaining time figuring out a way out, and just let's move past this as quickly as we can with as many different resources as we can. Doesn't always work that way. It's sometimes like a nice idea. It kind of gives everybody a different set of rules when you're approaching it. But then I also think, in addition to when you approach it that way as a partnership, you start understanding there's a safe space with this other person and you can have these conversations, and it's going to get a little weird and it's going to get uncomfortable, but you're both on the same team. So there's no points, like there's no one's winning and losing. You're working towards something greater than yourselves, which it sounds like it's actually the community who you're really working for. So it sounds like you two have quite a following that you've built up in these 15 months of doing this.
Yeah, we're really fortunate to be, because also like no one's in the space, you know? It's like, it was one of those realizations that, I also have, because I go to a lot of real estate conferences. You just look out to see and like how many people look like you. I probably can name, I can see like less than 5, less than 10. So I think there was just like a real desire for, you know, like wanting to see more people that look like us in the real estate world. And then once we just started being authentic, saying the message that we wanted to say, talking about our AAPI identity, we just like stood out from bigger pockets because they were just not talking about this kind of stuff. And then once we showed authenticity, showed ourselves closer to our truth, it was just a natural magnetism because everyone was feeling the same thing. There just wasn't a platform to talk about it on.
And there wasn't also a math behind it either. So Anita doing the data analysis with UCLA, and I'll give her kudos to that. This is totally her MBA background doing this market segmentation of what is needed. I would have never thought of doing that. I'd just be like, all right, let's just keep punching out the shows. But Anita's uses her MBA background to be like, okay, let's track the KPIs of how our podcasts are performing and make adjustments that way. Meanwhile, I'm just like the creative force of just being like, let's just pound stuff out there. But having Anita, you know, do that data science almost like roots it back to like, okay, it's not just like a kumbaya feeling of like not being represented. The numbers actually back it up, and here's the study, which is what's so great about, you know, Anita's MBA brain, like adding value to our partnership and her specific like lane, right? Yeah. So thanks, Anita.
Yeah, yeah. A little context to that. So Sarah Ladies has just published our first data survey on understanding the financial barriers for AAPI women in real estate. This is just really coming from our own, like our own research. Like there was just nothing out there specifically targeting my market segment, right? And so we partnered up with UCLA, actually two student groups, all data scientists doing this big survey with 75 people, and then just understanding what are those nuances or what are those barriers. And then there were just amazing, just really interesting findings, like sort of like how much women are very confident in balancing checkbooks, buying their first single family, first two single family. But what they were not confident in was commercial investing, managing like multiple midterm rentals, long-term rentals, short-term rentals together. And there's a lot of really amazing findings. And a lot of it has to also do with confidence too, right? We discovered there is a big correlation between buying properties and confidence, and women were just not, there's actually like a 1 to 13. So the men were at 13 properties to the one for the correlation of confidence.
Wow.
And sort of that plays to that part of women needing to feel that they need to have all everything in their pack before heading into the wilderness, you know? It's like they want to know everything. But men, like, you know, just going back to, like, you know, the our friend who said, you know, expect 100 crappy episodes. They're like, they can go into it with a lot less on their back, right? They're okay. It's part of the iterative process, right? And so, and you know, we talk about it sometimes in our workshops, in our podcasts, is that, like, I think that women are just, and especially in Asian culture, we're just not really meant for rejection, or we're just not built culturally for rejection. There's just more of a padding, more of like you're made for marriage. Like, you look beautiful so that you could attract more men, not like you're going out there to ask, like, you know, men for dates, you know? It's like, and I think I talked about in this last workshop, I'm like, how many women have asked out 10 people in their lives? I think only like one person like raised their hand. And then you're like, how many women have men asked out? Dozens, hundreds in their entire lifetime. And I think it just goes to show that it's just that it's like the point is that, like, we feed men to kind of do the reps, get to the thing. And so again, that really plays to real estate even, because, you know, they're needing everything. They need to make sure that they know everything about financing, about blah, 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 like all the teams, all the contracts that are in place. But men are just more like, well, I'll get there when I get there. I'm okay with filling in the blanks later. So anyway, all of this data that we are understanding, that we're actually making open source, and we're doing it every year, so that every single organization that touches AAPI women in real estate knows about this data, and we're all going the same direction.
That's incredible. And whatever links that you have, please share them with me, and we'll make sure we put them in the show notes so people can also look at this data. And I agree. Cielo, who's been on the podcast numerous times, I've talked with her extensively about her challenges around not having people to identify with, and then her challenges around just culturally that women are, they are culturally trained to take a little bit more of a submissive role and not to put themselves out there, not to take that risk, and her challenges within pushing herself to go to that next level. So I think it's great that you two are putting a spotlight on that and giving people. I have two nieces, and, you know, when there's other strong women for them to look up to, I always admire that, because we need to look up to people. We need mentors. And we're in an amazing time and space where we can, you two are on two different coasts, 3,000 miles apart, and you can mentor people on the other side of the world. And I think it's such a cool thing if social media is just leveraged in an amazing way to do that. So I applaud you both for doing that. What's in getting your message out there and working on this, what's, aside from the perfectionism, what's the bigger challenge that you're facing with getting this message heard?
I would say internally, I still battle with imposter syndrome. And I think this is a thing that affects a lot of women. And I think making peace with the fact that, you know, it's okay if I don't have all the answers, but me and Anita now have a Rolodex of people who do have the answers, and we bring them on the show and we ask them questions that, you know, add value to our audience. And I think also it's that it takes a lot, you know, for me to muster up the courage. I know this is surprising to a lot of people, but it takes a lot of courage for me to put myself out there and just kind of like do a cold email and say, hey, this is what we're about. We'd love to, you know, do a guest exchange and collaborate and be on your podcast, because a part of me is still afraid of that rejection of like, well, who are you? And why would, you know, we X, Y, and Z bring you here? And it's almost like similar to like when they teach you how to like defend your commission. It's almost like defending what our podcast and brand is about. So I think for me, it's still internally overcoming those challenges to help us scale and get our message out there.
I'm not a biologist. I'm going to preface it with that. But testosterone makes hard work feel good. And so men obviously have more testosterone than women, though women do have small amounts of it. But when you then work hard or put yourself out there or you take that risk, you actually feel good for doing it. And so I can totally see how, just on a biological level, again, this is backed up with no science degree, but I can see where one party picking up the phone feels very different than the other party picking up the phone, and then, you know, getting different results, and then how they ultimately feel about it. But I think imposter syndrome is absolutely a challenge. And I, to kind of loop back to what we were talking about earlier, with so many realtors starting this experience as a second, third, fourth career, we oftentimes show up and we're like, we're brand new at this. But I think we have to also remind ourselves, we're not new at life. And we have these other experiences, whether it's playing poker or having an MBA or whatever that thing is, that's your awesome attribute, secret weapon, that you just have to look for that place to put it, and it'll fit somewhere. You just have to work at shining it and polishing it and putting that in the forefront, so it's like your thing. I mean, I came into real estate after running martial arts schools. It's like, what does that have to do with real estate? It's like that. Those two puzzle pieces, could it be any more different from one another? But there are a lot of there's a lot of pieces that fit. And so I think it's really cool that you're taking literally your identity and bringing that to the business, and then bring it to other individuals and helping elevate them.
Yeah. And I want to iterate. I want to add to that too. I mean, regarding the imposter syndrome, and that is that, I feel like it took me some time, is that like, you don't have to be more successful than the people that you're teaching, right? It's like, there's this thing in real estate, you're like, oh, I did a 700 million in business, and then now I'm teaching everyone to do it. No, I mean, like, yes, of course, it kind of lends to your resume, but the real kind of fulfilling work is like the ones that just comes from wanting to help people, no matter where you are in your life, right? You're going to help people that are more successful than you. You're going to help people that are less successful than you, right? But it's really just about doing both equally, right? So don't feel like you can't start because you're not at a place in your career to get there. People value just wanting the humanness of wanting to be helped, right? So I think that's still kind of a learning for me, since, you know, now that we're getting bigger and bigger, it's just like people are coming and they're obviously more successful than I am. And I think I talked about that with Tiffany too. It's just like let's just come from a place of wanting to help people. And also just helps that imposter syndrome of feeling like people are better than you. They're not. It's really just comes from this authentic part of wanting to help. And I think too, for like me and Tiffany, talking about all these, like everything is compost kind of things, I think that we were also, it was really hard for us in the beginning, just because like we were trying to be realtors that we weren't really authentically, you know, like we were trying to, you know, Tiffany talks about like being, you know, talking to the Wall Street guys, like trying to pretend to be like, you know, you're going to sell the penthouse, like kind of realtor. And then, you know, and then it was hard. We went home every day. We're just like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, the problem with that is because you're not being authentic to who you are, right? And then since we started serving women, like Asian women, that was the whole entire thing. The work doesn't even feel hard. It feels easy, right? It's like, you know that you're doing the right work when you feel like this like peace and internal, like, oh, this feels like the right puzzle piece for me. And then we couldn't take off with all the Wall Street guys, but with this, you know, like we have 22,000 members just in a year and a half that have gravitated towards us, right? It's like that comes naturally because you are just being who you are, and that's the easy part. It feels right.
Depression comes from comparison, and so when you're on, let's say, social media, you have a really nice car, but somebody has a nicer car, you feel dinged down, but your car is really nice compared to a lot of other people's. And so to your point, I think it's a great reminder that John Maxwell talks about the law of lids. And he talks about there's basically the level one leader, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And essentially you can lead people one level below and below that. So if you're a level 8 leader, you can lead people who are 7s, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1s. And so if you're trying to be a level 6 leader, but leading 10s and 9s, that's where you're way out of your league. And that's when that's what we're comparing ourselves to. And that's when we are, oh, I feel like an imposter. They're running these multi-million dollar companies and yada, yada. But the reality is those level 1 people, you can help them get to level 2 and you can help them get to 3 and 4 and 5, and they'll still be with you that whole time. And I think when we kind of step back and look at that, that's when we pull ourselves out of that. We pull ourselves out of the perfectionism, and we can pull ourselves out of feeling like the imposter, because you do have a unique perspective and you do have this unique set of skills that only you have, and you can help somebody figure out where they're stuck and you have the key and you can help them. So why not?
I love that.
Wow. That flew by. It's funny. I just had a conversation with my good friend Lauda, and I immediately was like, there's so much more we could have talked about. I would love in the future to have you both back on. I do feel like there's so much more we could have chatted about. We just unfortunately ran out of time. So you have an open invite from me, and we will certainly have you both back on in the future.
Thanks. Sean, we would love to have you and Cielo on our podcast. I think that would be a cool matchup, because I've seen your guys' chemistry on your podcast, and we've had 4 people on our podcast before. So, and that was, I think that's where we kind of max out on it. But I think it would kind of be cool to see your guys' partnership play out on our podcast. We can probably come up with a cool list of questions for you guys.
That would be amazing. I would love to do that. She's actually on a plane right now, flying back from Europe. But I will float it by her. Based on what you two are doing, I have zero doubt that she'll say yes.
Aw, thanks. All right.
Thank you so much.
All right. And that is a wrap.